A Napa guy knows the only way you'd give a freshly minted driver a brand new car is if he promises to never drive it. Instead, let him grind the gears and knock over the neighbor's mailbox in something a little more suited to his skill level. And with over 400,000 parts and a little Napa know-how, he can safely drive something that's nearly as old as he is. It's not perfect, but it's perfect for him. That's Napa know-how.
Blog Talk Radio.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. All three engines up and burning. 2, 1, 0, and liftoff.
Coach on Fire Radio.
I am the tire.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Insider Secrets with the Functional Foodie here on the Coach on Fire radio network. I'm Jane, the Functional Foodie, and as ever, this show is all about great food and how to use it for achieving and maintaining fantastic health. Now, today, this is going to be a show that we're recording because it's midnight here in the UK. It's not 7 p.m., my normal time. It's actually midnight because I'm going to be talking to an amazing lady all the way over in Queensland, Australia. So it's first thing in the morning for her. So we've had to coordinate Australia and the UK and the US to put this show on. So there won't be opportunities to phone in today, but there will clearly be links for people to ask questions if they have any for me or for the wonderful lady that I'm going to be interviewing called Kath Manuel from Queensland, Australia. An amazing horticulturalist, horticultural therapist. She's an organic gardener. She's incredibly experienced in permaculture and horticulture and bringing amazing, amazing ways to use growing plants into even things like dementia care. So I'm going to be talking to her later, very, very soon, and going into more of those wonderful ways that we can get people growing. In the meantime, our functional foodie focus for this episode, and later give you a very easy and absolutely delicious recipe that you can use to enjoy all the wonderful food and the healthy things that we're going to be talking about today. So if you'd like to find out more about functional food and about my work as a functional foodie, I have my hub site over at www.functional-foodie.com. That's a recipe hub, and it's a membership site, and lots of targeted health advice and courses and membership options for people who want to have a sort of one-stop shop for healthy advice and for delicious food. And of course, delicious food is what it's all about. Anyone who signs up on there will get a free framework resource from me with what your day should look like, shopping list, recipes, and just about everything you need to make that start on healthy food. So hop on over and grab that one. In the meantime, let's talk about the focus for today. And obviously talking to Kath in a minute about growing and gardening and really where everything starts from, which is seeds in the ground and how we can bring our own produce into our lives. And of course, the freshest produce is the healthiest produce. So really what I talked about today is seasonality. And, you know, we do get used to being able to get anything we want at any time of year. So I can walk into a supermarket in the depths of winter here in the UK and pick up dragon fruit. That doesn't grow here. It's flown in. So whenever we talk about seasonality, we've got issues to do with sustainability, carbon footprint. And also, you know, as soon as something is picked, it starts to degrade. So, you know, how long has that dragon fruit been in the air, in storage? What was its journey from where it grew? Somewhere exotic and hot, not in the UK in the middle of winter, to get to me. And how much is actually gone into the storage, the temperature down, doesn't really preserve nutrients as well as you might think it does. So the best thing you can do for the freshest, healthiest food is to buy seasonal food and to buy local food. So find your markets, find your box schemes. Google is such a good resource when it comes to finding perhaps little farms that you didn't know about, little markets you didn't know about. Keep an eye on any events in your area, and you might be surprised who is actually starting to grow and produce fresh local food in your area, because the law of supply and demand, if people are wanting fresh fruit and veg, seasonal fruit and veg, then the people will spring up to provide it. And we want to encourage more of this and try and keep local economies going, contribute to the economy as well as being really healthy. So, you know, what more can we want on an all-round holistic basis for not just our health, but the health of the planet and the health of local economies? We should be trying to buy as locally and freshly as possible. It also means hopefully that there's less artificial methods used, that perhaps there's less pesticides used, and seasonal food is the tastiest, I have to say. And the recipe we're going to have later involves asparagus, and asparagus is one of my favorite foods, and we're just hitting asparagus season now, and it's short season, it really is just sort of a month or so to get the best asparagus that's grown even down here in Cornwall. So I love it every year, and actually it creates a kind of excitement because you really look forward to when the season starts and you enjoy it while it lasts. If you can have it all year round, it kind of takes the edge off it a little bit. And it's the same with strawberry season. We have the most fragrant, the most glorious strawberries that you can imagine grown just over in Cornwall. And that season of a few weeks where they're at their best is one of the best things of the summer for me. It's the strawberries from St. Dominic, even from my mum's garden, which are so sweet and so fragrant, and they take you back to your childhood and just biting into that fruit every single time. And food does take us back to our childhood. It is really full of memories. And I'm sure everybody here listening has some food memory from their childhood that's to do with something that they couldn't get all the time. And that's why I want to encourage all of this, because it does. Well, from my point of view, obviously health is the main thing. It's got the most nutrients if you can eat the seasonal food. So everybody here listening will be in a different part of the world, so you're going to have different foods available. And as we're going to speak to Kath in a second, she'll be telling us about some incredibly exotic things that she can grow where she is. I think it's on the Sunshine Coast over in Queensland, that I wouldn't have a hope of growing over in Cornwall, in spite of the fact that we do have a subtropical climate and we can grow pineapples and various things. They don't grow the same as they do over in Queensland. So right now we're looking at amazing things like asparagus and aubergines and things like the cabbages, the spring greens, even some herbs. A lot of our seafood here on the coast is starting to become quite seasonal too, because we forget that meat and fish and herbs are also seasonal foods. Certainly spring lamb, of course, we talk about, but even things like mackerel and salmon are starting to come into the best season. And of course, new potatoes, Cornish new potatoes are famous, as are Jersey new potatoes. So it will all be different wherever you are. And it'd be very interesting to see if you come to your local market and really start to find out what's in season in your area. Be a good experiment, see what you can come up with. So now let's get on to Kath. I need to introduce her in a second. She is incredibly knowledgeable about anything to do with growing, gardening, and all these wonderful foods into existence. And I love the fact she's a horticultural therapist, and she actually uses growing as a form of therapy to help people with mental health issues. And I do want to talk about that in a bit, so I will let her introduce herself from Australia. Hi Kath, how are you this morning? It's 9 o'clock in the morning for you, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Good morning from Australia, Jane. It's lovely to connect with you. It's very exciting.
No. Yeah, it's great. Just a very, very clear connection, which is fantastic. So
wonderful.
You, I mean, I think you've probably been up for a couple of hours, haven't you? Did you get up and have to do a lot of watering? What have you been doing first thing this morning? Is it your first, you open your eyes and you think about your plants?
I do most mornings, but we've had some beautiful rain here on the Sunshine Coast for probably about 4 or 5 days now. So when I can hear the rain overnight, I'm really grateful that I don't have to get up and water the garden in the morning. I can actually just go outside for a walk. I usually take a cup of tea. Sometimes I'll make a herbal tea, but I love a pot of fresh chai tea in the morning. So I head out to the garden and just spend about 20 minutes just having a look around and checking for bugs and looking at all my new seedlings and picking fruit. I'll do a harvest for my husband and my boys for their lunch boxes, or if we need any greens or anything for breakfast, and head back inside. And usually I do that in my pajamas and a pair of gum boots or something like that. So I have a nice start to the day.
Well, I tell you, my mother is exactly the same, because she's got a very big garden, and I grew up obviously with kitchen garden and all growing all our fruit and veg. So I know that she goes out first thing, and even I go out first thing with my little patch, and I've got a few things out the back. And when the blueberries have started, just to go out and pick some every morning to go on your breakfast. And I have to keep netting over to make sure none of the birds get them, and I'm getting more every year. And in fact, actually,
yeah.
This year might be the first year that I might actually have enough to eat and some inside for my breakfast. So,
wow,
they're gone.
That's the way
they're gone.
A lot of my things, like the blueberries and strawberries and the snow peas, a lot of them don't make it back to the house, because my youngest son, he actually loves just to eat out in the garden if he's hungry, or if I've asked him to wait until dinner and he just needs a little snack, he'll head to the garden and just eat. So, a lot of things don't make it inside to the kitchen in our house.
That's brilliant. I mean, obviously, I grew up with our own chickens and geese and our own veg, massive kitchen garden. I mean, big enough that there's now, they've still got quite a lot, but there's 2 5-bedroom houses, detached houses, that were most of that kitchen garden. That's how big it was.
Oh, wow.
It's fantastic. And both my grandparents and my mum were sort of really, doing it all the time. And as they've got older, my grandparents obviously aren't around anymore. You can't manage it. It's just too much. But having grown up in that atmosphere, my food story was all about just going out and picking your own food every day. So if you come from the same roots, what's your food story? Do tell us where you came from.
Well, I grew up in Sydney, in suburban Sydney. We live near the beach, so I spend a lot of time at the beach. On weekends, I was swimming and running. So my parents mainly just grew fruit trees, but my grandmother had a beautiful garden in the back of her suburban home. But we weren't allowed to touch anything. She was, she didn't want us to touch things. So we'd go and look, but we couldn't really touch things out there. But my gardening experiences sort of came later when my mum remarried, and my stepfather, who's 85 this year and he's still a very keen gardener, he sort of introduced me to gardening and encouraged me to spend time outside. And I always found it quite relaxing just to be out amongst the flowers and just look at what was being grown and pick some food. So that's where it all really started for me. And that passion for nature has just always stayed with me. I think I've always had it, but I didn't explore it until sort of later in life. And I'm really grateful now that my passion turned into my occupation in the late 90s when I studied horticulture. I'm really, really blessed, I guess, to be able to follow my passion for gardening and connecting with nature, and turn that into an occupation, turn that into a business, and now to inspire people all around the world to grow food and to connect with nature and just, gain the benefits that gardening and connecting with food that you grow and connecting with the earth really give us. So that's my main message now, is to get those health and well-being benefits from gardening.
It is amazing, isn't it, how for anybody out there who hasn't grown anything themselves or doesn't grow their own, there is something so planting seeds and then going out and then what, when the seeds are broken through the ground and they start growing, the excitement that you feel,
yep.
It is like Christmas. And I love it,
it is.
Especially when I plant my peas and four beans, because I love them so much. And going out and going, oh, and they go, oh, they're poking through. I mean, it's ridiculous,
yep.
Really. We're grown people, but it doesn't go away. It never changes. Every year it's
the
same. Do you still get that excitement?
Oh, absolutely. I think every day, you know, I went out the other day and I've got peas coming up now in the garden, little bush peas. And I think that's that childlike excitement in us, that gardening and growing things, whether it's ornamental plants, you know, flowers or trees, whatever it is. I think it's also the intrigue around putting a seed in the ground, something that is so small, putting it in the earth and watching it sprout and watching it turned into something that brings us absolute joy is, I don't think we ever move away from that. It's actually something through my research into horticultural therapy, I came across a word which I love now. It's one of my favorite words. It's called biophilia. And it means that we have an innate connection to nature. It's within all of us. And if we lose that connection, we can have problems with emotional and mental well-being. But when we have that regular connection with nature, it keeps us buoyant. It keeps our spirits up. It brings joy and happiness into our lives. And it is something that's in us. So I guess when that excitement comes from things growing or picking food or smelling flowers, all those beautiful sensory experiences that we get from a garden, it is actually something that's in like our cells. It's in our soul. It's in our DNA. It's in us. So we have that throughout our whole life. And that's where I love to encourage other people to experience that, I guess, because I experience it every day. And without it, I think people without that are missing something in life, really.
Oh, yeah, I agree. I mean, it's one of those things that I would love to see put onto the curriculum in schools, is that you have, especially in primary school, so, you know, around the ages of 7 or 8, you get kids growing. And I know that we do things like the sunflower seed or grow the sunflowers, or I was really lucky that my granddad has always had a greenhouse, and even my mum still has a greenhouse full of tomatoes every year. And he always planted a little yellow cherry tomato plant was mine. In all his tomatoes, that was my plant. And I used to go in and pick cherry tomatoes and the sweetness and this kind of thing. And I think if you can get this when children are young, I mean, quite young, and you can foster that joy and that excitement, you've got them for life, because we all remember things that come from our childhood. They're formative experiences, aren't they?
And planting that interest and the passion for it at a young age is really important, because there is research showing that once that, I guess, seed of gardening excitement is sown into kids, it does stay with them for life. There's actually fabulous gardening programs for schools throughout Australia, and one particular is called the Stephanie Alexander Kitchen Garden Foundation. Started from Stephanie Alexander, who's a famous Australian chef. So a lot of the primary schools around Australia now do that program, and they grow the food and they harvest it, and they have kitchens in their school and they cook healthy food. It's a wonderful program. So, yeah, it's happening. I think it'll slowly end up, but it'd be great if it was just automatically part of the curriculum for schools.
Oh, I'd love to see that here. I mean, certainly, having spent many years in school myself teaching English, and also now being part of something called Food Plus, which is a group of people who've come together, different experts who've come together to try and bring sustainable food into what we call sustainable food cities. And where I live, Plymouth is one of the first ones to sort of bring that in. And that's really good. We're trying to get this sea change in to schools, and people like, I'm sure you've heard of Jamie Oliver, and people like Hugh Fernley Whittingstall, who've brought sort of the small holding into the mainstream, and who've brought nutrition is now on our school curriculum, but we haven't quite got with the growing yet. And I've actually we've got a program we're trying to get into schools locally, where it's saying, right, okay, so let's have a club and once a week a meet, but then let's grow something and then let's harvest it and then let's learn about why it's good for you and then let's cook it. You could do that over a period of time. So I'd love to see more of that here because I think it's so important. And it could take a generation to change the health problems we've got. And that starts with teaching children where their food comes from and how to grow it and why it's
and
so good for them.
Yeah, and I think they've got to have that understanding about why it's so healthy. You know, we can say to them, eating fresh, healthy, local food is the best for you, but telling them why and explaining how it's grown, I think then they have that understanding and appreciation of it. So I really think we've got to take one step back and go back to actually growing the food and how it's grown and how easy it is to grow to have an appreciation of the importance of healthy, locally grown, eating seasonal food. I know you and I share a great passion for that.
We do.
So it needs to start all the way back in the soil. And that's why my business is called Soil to Supper. Two of my favorite things, dirt and food, but it's taking that whole process of fresh, healthy, clean food, but teaching it all comes out of the earth. And that's where we really have to start is with healthy soil. That's the key to fresh food.
And this is why I was talking about the seasonal local food, because when you're having, when you've got farmers who are having to produce intensively, they're not just spraying, but they're not treating the land properly. They're not resting, they're not letting the fields go fallow. They're just putting fertilizers in, and that actually disrupts the entire nutrient content of the food.
Absolutely.
And this is where you get these problems. And quite often, in the workshops I teach, I have this whole section on the data that is brought out every year about the nutrient profiles of foods, and saying, well, look, we've got too much niacin in these and we've got not enough vitamin C and that's gone down. And actually the biggest one is always, well, if you have one tomato, your grandma had one tomato, you've got to eat 10 to get the same amount of iron because of the soil.
Nutrients.
And people go, what? They have no clue that this is what goes on. It's because they're putting fertilizer in the soil, they're not letting it rest and rotating the crops and all the land husbandry. And you know far more about that than I do, obviously. But
the thing I teach people, and I teach a lot of school kids, as you know, I teach all ages, and it's pretty much all the same message that I try and get across, is that when we have healthy soil, so when food's grown in beautiful fresh soil that's been treated with natural growing methods, so we haven't used any organic chemicals, we haven't over-tilled and overturned the soil and added pesticides and things to it, so it's considered organic soil basically as it should be, not over dealt with. But when we've got fresh healthy soil, our food is then healthy, so we have healthy food growing. And if we're eating that food, then we have healthy bodies because we're getting all the nutrients that have come out of that healthy soil. So when the soil's lacking nutrients and it has been over turned and tilled and fed with chemicals, if we're eating food that's come out of soil like that, it basically has no nutrients. It's been given some fertilizers, but that's enough to get the plant to grow. But the food actually itself doesn't really contain any nutrients. So then we're going to be nutrient deficient. We're lacking the nutrients that our bodies need. So this is where it's really important for people to come back to growing some of the food that they eat. Not all of it. I think we have to be realistic about this and think, well, we can't possibly grow everything that we want to eat. But if we can grow the main foods, you know, if people could start to grow two or three herbs or some fresh greens or something, some vegetables and fruit that they can pick and eat, we're putting then those nutrients from our own healthy soil that we've created, and we're putting those nutrients through the food into our body. So we're getting the vitality, we're getting the life that's in the food, we're getting a beautiful balance of all the nutrients and the elements that our bodies need, and we're getting that food fresh. So it's straight out of the garden when it has its maximum amount of nutrients. The nutrients haven't had time to diminish because of, you know, packaging and transporting and all those things. When it comes out of the garden, it's got the most life in it. And I think if people could understand that about the soil, then growing that food, they really are going to improve their health, gut health, you know, their nutrients, their skin, everything about their body is going to come out of that fresh food that's grown out of their garden. So I think it's getting the balance, you know, if you can grow something and then you can buy something that's grown locally or within season. Like there's some things that I just don't buy because they don't grow very well here, but I know they're grown within a few hours of where I live, things like apples and pears. So I think if we've got that beautiful balance of some of our foods coming out of that fresh, healthy soil, then we've really got a chance of keeping our health up, you know, and looking after our health and well-being in the long term, not just the short term. So, yeah, it's an important thing to look at soil health. And I write about it. I talk about it. It's something that I probably do the most with my teaching because I know that food coming out of that soil is going to be good for us. So we've really got to go right back to the dirt. And that's the place to start.
We have, absolutely. I remember being one statistic, what I mean, this is quite a while ago, so I don't know what it is now, but I mean, the statistic was that since the end of World War II, which is where a lot of intensive farming started, because of, you know, well, for all sorts of reasons, that's when it really kind of kicked in. There's been something like an 85% reduction of magnesium levels in food.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's because our master mineral and people, people are kind of chucking magnesium into themselves when they're not realizing that actually you can't just supplement single nutrients. This is a whole different show. supplementation. But magnesium is the master mineral. 85% reduction is, we've got massive magnesium deficiency chronically within society, leading to anxiety, mental health issues.
Mental health problems, absolutely.
Problems, muscle problems, arthritis, hormone imbalances. There's just a whole slew of different conditions that are becoming more and more common that are directly related to the lack of nutrition in the food.
So if you grow your own and have healthy soil, which I've got articles that your listeners
coming
can
out your
read.
Ears.
I'll send some links to you on creating that really good dirt. I call it delightful dirt sometimes when I'm teaching, but creating that really good soil through composting and manure and adding beautiful organic fertilizers and not over-tilling your soil, just treating your soil, you know, with care, because soil has something called the soil food web, and that contains all the organisms that produce they basically produce the food for the plants. So if we feed those organisms and feed the soil, you're going to have a higher level of nutrients available for your plants, which then means you've got healthy plants. So it really comes back to caring for the soil, and then you're going to have that healthy food, and then you won't have all those nutrient deficiencies in your body. So it's quite simple, and I think a lot of people think it's really difficult to grow food, but it's not. You know, I try and teach everyone a sustainable way of growing, which means sustainable, good for the earth, but also sustainable for us. How can we sustain a beautiful organic garden while we lead busy lives? We have kids, we have marriages, we have, you know, so much going on in our lives. How can we actually sustain a beautiful little kitchen garden amongst our busy life? And that's one thing that I really love to work with my clients and guide people through, having that fresh food to pick. 12 months of the year, you can actually grow things to pick every single day. So, yeah, it's a great passion of mine, and I love to share the message with everyone.
Well, you know, it is, and this is the same excuse I get about people not cooking is, well, it's time. And I'm thinking, well, you know, when people start to realize that when their health eventually keels over, they're not going to have time or energy to do anything. So if you want to stay healthy, you have to make that time to possibly to cook and to prepare and to shop locally or grow, whatever you're going to do, and look on that as nurturing time, self-care time, and actually relaxation time. And it's amazing how many people here, we have things called, I don't know what you do in Australia, but over in the UK, we have, for people who haven't got big gardens or they don't want to they can't grow in their gardens, we have called allotments, which is sort of and then it's just divided up, And honestly, the waiting list for allotments have just gone through the roof.
I know.
For the last two
I've
years.
Heard.
People cannot get hold of them. In fact, a friend of mine just got hold of one on the top of a cliff overlooking the Cornish coast. I mean, it's the most beautiful place, but it's so overgrown because it's been neglected for about 20 years because
wow.
it was just fell in disrepair, and she's having to ask for help to go and clear all these brambles. But she's just looking over the sea into Cornwall, you know, while
beautiful.
She's gardening. It's blissful, absolutely blissful. Her escape.
Yeah. Well, I talk, as you know, all the time about how gardening is a form of therapy, and I teach that to people now. And, you know, I say a lot to my clients, and especially when I'm out doing public speaking at events, to look at gardening as not as a chore, because as soon as it becomes a chore, it goes against everything that we do as using gardening for therapy, which gardening reduces stress, it reduces blood pressure, it increases all those feel-good hormones, it does lift our spirits and our health. As soon as it becomes a chore and stressful, it actually has an adverse effect, you know, it increases stress. So we look at gardening as a form of therapy, and instead of paying to go to the gym, instead of looking at diets and all those things to lose weight, or going off to meditation or yoga classes, which I think are brilliant, but you could just go out to the garden. It really doesn't cost you any money, and connect with nature and do a few really small gardening little activities out there. It improves your health, it increases your your happiness and improves your mood. There's so many amazing benefits just to 20 minutes in the garden. You can just go out there for 20 minutes. So it does save time if you kind of look at it as an investment in your health, I guess, because you're getting food, you're growing food. You don't need to then buy a whole range of multivitamins or do other things if you're getting your food fresh from the garden. Plus you're getting exercise, fresh air. You can have fun with the kids and the family. You know, I could go on and on about all those benefits, but I won't, because I've written an article about it, so I will send you that one. But 20 minutes in the garden is all you need, and there's your therapy, there's your health and well-being out in the garden. It's great.
Yeah, I mean, I find gardening very, very meditative. And when I'm sitting down looking, but you know, do you know what the downside is? And there is one. You could probably tell me why this has happened, because I don't know, and I'm very annoyed, is my broad beans were just coming through. And I thought, oh, they're just coming through. And then something had chewed the tops off.
Something's eaten them.
Something underneath the soil had obviously chewed through the shoot that had grown out of the broad bean. And I'm thinking, what? How dare you? You know, you declare war on the slugs and war on the birds that are not eating your produce. So it can have some challenges, you know, and actually to tackle those things naturally and to get your food and not be growing to feed other things, much as we love to have our holistic environment.
Yeah.
I was really upset. I was like, what?
I know, and you know, this is the one of the things, other than how do I compost? You know, I get asked all the time, and so I'm always talking and sharing my articles on composting, because I think people want to compost and create good soil, but it's a bit of a mystery to some people. But other than how do I compost, I'm always getting asked about bugs in the garden.
Yes.
It's a topic that comes up in our Facebook group all the time. Look, I look at gardening in a very holistic way. I don't buy or use any chemical or even natural sprays. I've got a few recipes on how to make them. But I just believe in having such a good balance in the garden. There are critters that come along and eat things. I always tend to plant or sow say double of what I really want in case I lose a few things along the way. But in the case of your broad beans, I'd say it's probably a grub. We have a grub here called white curl grub, which lives, it's the larvae of a beetle, which is in the soil, and it eats the roots and the little shoots of plants. So we have that in our soil, which, you know, you need to slowly or gently dig out and remove. But things do get eaten. Birds do come along. We have possums here in Queensland that come in and eat things at night. At the moment, I've got a little marsupial eating my pumpkins in the garden. So I need to get out with my garden, in the garden, you know, with those bags that onions come in, those like string bags. I'm going to cover my pumpkins in those to stop it getting eaten. But, you know, I'm okay with nature. I just think if I can have enough to share with everything, I know it's not everyone's answer to bugs and critters coming and eating, but you just take what you can and you maybe just grow a little bit more so you can share with the creatures that also live in the garden, because it's their space as well. You know,
I know, it's hard. Most of them. I was like, oh, what?
I know.
It was just been half of them. Like, oh, well, I better plant some more. Wait, see.
You could put some little cup, like a little plastic cup or a tin. Just take the bottom out and sit that around when you put the seeds in. That might help to keep little things out and just to protect your seedlings as they're coming up. So,
like a cone sort of around the bit of soil that the seed planted in. Good idea.
Yeah.
Because I love
a toilet roll. Toilet rolls are great. Yeah.
Oh, that's a good idea. Yeah. But I do cover. I do sort of have the tunnels and the nets, mainly to keep the cats, you know, cats off.
Yeah.
If you're in a domestic environment, as I'm in, you know, so gardens back onto each other and this kind of thing, so it's all very private. But you do. I mean, cats. You've got to watch out for the cats. If you've got a garden that you're growing things in, it's classic for cats. So get the cat scarers or whatever else. But no, that was my kind of thing. I was like, oh, they're coming up.
It's heartbreaking.
So I've got to back and show them all again. I'm like, oh, okay, fair enough.
But you know, you can grow, if you don't have the space, you could grow herbs in containers. I grow microgreens, which I totally love because they're packed with so many nutrients and I can keep them inside on the windowsill or in a nice sunny spot. Microgreens are full of vitality and really, really high nutrients.
Oh, broccoli. Broccoli the best. Absolutely packed. Jam-packed with nutrients. Broccoli, microgreens. Yep. Amazing.
Yeah. So I do a lot of different ones. Radish is one of my favourites because I love that peppery flavour of the little leaves. But, yeah, microgreens are perfect. You don't have to worry about cats digging up your microgreens.
No, I grow those in the kitchen. I've got a little propagator. I grow my microgreens in to keep them on the kitchen windowsill. But I've got the herbs out the front because I've got a very south-facing front garden. So there's a lot of those kind of things. My herb bed is out in the front. We've had a discussion already about why my coriander goes to seed in about 5 minutes. It's because it's too sunny out there. I need to put it somewhere else. Obviously, I've got other barrels out the back for other things like mint, so it stays contained and various things, you know. And
perfect
for me, especially in the summer, you know, people should be out growing these herbs and using them as salad leaves, you know, mint and all these wonderful
yum.
Things because they're so healthy. People forget
they are
how healthy.
So healthy.
Yeah. It's amazing.
And those little leafy greens, you know, grow some lettuce and rocket, and sorrel's one of my favorites. I love growing sorrel. I just love having greens all around and parsley. Parsley is one of my top herbs. It's just packed with so many nutrients, vitamin C,
iron.
Great for digestion, great for the breath. So I put parsley in everything. I garnish everything with parsley. My family's used to it now, but I just figure I'm just feeding them life. You know, they're getting all that vitality in there every time they have some fresh parsley. So, if people want to start growing and not sure what to grow, parsley is a great one. It's so easy. And so are chives. You know, there's a few plants that I call easy plants just to have in a little container just near the kitchen or somewhere in a little sunny spot. But they are really easy plants to grow. They're packed with life, packed with good vitality. So,
fresh coriander, I think, and mint and coriander are my favourite, especially when we hit the summer, is to have one of those wonderful watermelon salads with watermelon and feta cheese and olives and then red onion.
Oh, I love
making that. Mint, fresh mint in there.
Beautiful.
Good, actually.
And
love
edible
it.
Flowers.
Love it.
Edible flowers are such a joy to grow. Like, they look gorgeous out in the garden, but they're beautiful when you bring them in and pull off the petals and just garnish a meal. You know, I made a salad the other night and put some, we've got Mexican tarragon growing here, and they're covered in your little yellow flowers at the moment, and they taste like aniseed. So I covered the salad in the flowers from the Mexican tarragon, and my sister was eating it, and she said, "This has a beautiful aniseed flavor, this salad. It just came from the flowers, and they just look so pretty on the top of the salad." So edible flowers are another great thing to grow. And, you know, you get little nutrients out of those as well, plus they're packed with flavor. I love yeah. little violas, and put things on fruit salad and, yeah, in yogurt.
Brilliant.
Yummy.
Mm. Yeah, dandelions are also really good, although
yes,
you want to try and keep those, because it's the first food for the bees sort of over here, and our dandelions. And I've got a friend who's a forager. She teaches foraging, and she teaches low-income families how to go and actually forage for food.
I would love to come visit.
Yeah, and we do health walks together, hormonal things, like hormonal health walks. So we'll go into the woods, and she'll say, "Oh, there's this, and oh, yeah, that's good for this," and wood avens. And honestly, she's an absolute fount of knowledge, and even her little four-year-old can sort of point out all these things.
Yeah.
You know, so that's what she does. One of the biggest
beautiful
things, of course, you know, dandelions. Just pick dandelions, the lovely yellow dandelion heads, and put them in your salad, and they're so
gorgeous,
healthy.
Yep.
They're so healthy, really good.
And the leaves as well. You can eat the leaves. They've got a great flavor.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. No, they're very, very healthy. But
yeah.
What I was going to ask you is for those of us sort of perhaps listening in the UK and in America, what, you know, what our seasons bring? What's your seasons like in Queensland? How do your seasons go in terms of produce and what you can grow and what you can't? Obviously, we have very classic spring, summer, winter, autumn, whatever else. Tell us about Queensland, where you are.
Well, where we are on the Sunshine Coast is like southeast Queensland. So we're about a 3-hour drive from the border of say 2.5-hour drive from the border of Queensland and New South Wales. So our climate is subtropical, and we have very mild winters. I'd say our winters are probably a bit like your spring and autumn, but our summers are very warm and very humid. So we grow all the beautiful tropical fruits here, like pineapples and mango, and we grow dragon fruit. I know you spoke about dragon fruit in the intro. We grow bananas, and I was actually had a little chuckle when I was in the UK a couple of years ago and found a fruit store with bananas in London, and I thought, "Whoa, these aren't from here." And I found it quite interesting to look through some fruit stores and see where all the fruit was coming from, and just thinking, wow, it's all imported to the UK.
Yeah.
So we actually grow dragon fruit. I've got quite a few growing. I grow them up all the trunks and the stems of our fruit trees here. So we grow a beautiful fruit called a carambola, which is a star fruit. They are absolutely divine. They're one of my favorite fruits just to pick off the tree and just crunch into, and the juice just runs down my face, and they're incredibly sweet and crunchy. So carambola is one of my favorites. Lots of passion fruit. We do actually grow a lot of bananas. They grow really well here. And I used to run workshops teaching people how to grow bananas in their backyard. So I've got quite extensive crops of bananas. So I use those quite a lot to make ice cream and cakes and smoothies. I have a Thermomix, so it makes beautiful banana, and just a scoop of organic coconut cream makes a beautiful ice cream. So it's only two ingredients, and it's absolutely divine. So we grow lots of fruits. We do probably have 2 months here of winter that it does get a little cool. Occasionally we have a frost, because I live off the coast on a 3.5-acre property. So it does get a little cool, probably July and August, but you know, cool, nothing like you guys get cool over there. For us, it's a lovely break from the heat, because the heat's tiring. I find it quite tiring. Even now, the days are still quite warm and humid. So I'm really looking forward to some cooler weather. Things grow all year round. Tomatoes, if they're established and growing through summer, they'll continue through autumn. The basil's still growing. You know, it's autumn here, and my basil's still looking beautiful and flowering. So I grow great eggplants and chilies and capsicum and all those things in summer. But we can grow quite a lot here in Queensland, I guess, as far as the tropical fruits and having a lot of greens, like salad greens, will grow all year round here. So there's quite a lot of things we can grow. But the key, I guess, to growing really good crops is knowing what grows in your climate and also in that season. And there's some information out. I usually write a monthly gardening article talking about what to grow, whether you're in the northern or southern hemisphere. So that's helpful if people want from my website, soiltosupper.com. But it's really important to grow the foods that grow in your climate and in the current season, because if you grow foods that aren't happy in the climate you live in, or you're growing them out of season, they're really going to struggle and they're going to be more prone to pest and disease problems. So I've seen some clients here in Queensland growing broccoli, which is a cool season crop, trying to grow broccoli in summer, and they're wondering why it's struggling and everything's eating it and it's got, you know, bugs all over it. It's because it's grown in the wrong season, and plants that grow in the wrong season are stressed. And what happens with stressed plants or underfed plants, you know, plants that are lacking nutrients, is they're going to be attacked by pests and diseases. So they're actually a little bit like us. You know, when our immune system's low and we're not eating enough food with nutrients in it, we then tend to get sick. You know, we get the flu and all those other things wrong with us. And plants are exactly the same. So coming back again to the soil health, if plants are lacking nutrients and they're stressed and, you know, they're not growing in the right season or the right climate, they're more prone to pest and disease problems. It's just something that happens in nature. So if plants are grown in really good, healthy, rich, nutrient-rich soil, they're grown in the right season, they're grown in the climate that suits your location, you're going to have beautiful, healthy crops that are hardly affected by pests. They won't have diseases, but they'll be packed with nutrients and they'll be growing. They'll actually thrive, you know, like us. So I guess that's the key for people to really look at their climate and what season it is, and grow plants just for that time. And yeah, they'll be beautiful.
Well, yeah, I mean, it can be incredibly simple, or it can be incredibly complicated. I know even from my parents live, I suppose I live about 10, 15 miles away from where I grew up. So I'm just over the border there now. Mm-hmm. And whereas in my last house, I could grow tomatoes outside, no problem. Here, I moved to where I can't, because I'm much nearer to the sea and I'm higher up, so they get blight.
Yes.
God knows why. Never happened in my last house. It's really weird. And some things grow really well for me that even my mother over 50 miles away cannot get to grow, because the soil is different. There's different types of soil, aren't there, as well? So
totally. Different soil types and different minerals in the soil. And then there's also the different pH levels of the soil. So those things need to be checked. And I think if people are growing and things aren't working out for them, don't get disheartened and give up, because it just means trying things, something a little different. You know, if your tomatoes aren't growing well, maybe put them in the front garden against a warm brick wall instead of the back garden out in the open, or, you know, just move things around. I like to record things as well, you know, in a journal or something. If something's grown really well, or take a photo on your phone, if something's grown really well or it's worked, you know, in that particular spot, I tend to keep going with the things that work well in our garden. And I also grow the food that we really eat the most of. I don't grow so much of things that we don't eat, because that's a, you know, bit of a waste of time and space in my garden. So knowing the foods that my boys really love to eat, like I mentioned, the snow peas and the snap peas, my kids love those. So I will always grow lots of those, so we have lots of them. I love rocket. I love sorrel. I love lettuce. All this talk of food's making me hungry. But I always make sure I've got a ton of parsley growing. I grow parsley everywhere throughout, like, all my gardens, whether it's ornamental or edible parts of my kitchen garden. There's lots of things I'll just spread all over the place because I love eating them so much. And when I'm walking around, I just pick things and eat them. So it's nice to have them all through the garden, just to enjoy.
Well, just before I ask you a final question and I do my recipe, yeah, let me direct people to where they can find this amazing information, because I'm sure your Facebook group is a source of brilliant information for people, and I'm sure that those who are on Facebook, they could go and ask you questions and they can interact with the community, but also you have your website with various articles and everything else. So give us all the information about where anybody, where no matter where they're listening, can go and get some of your hints and tips and your insider knowledge. Get them growing.
Okay, well, my website is Soil to Supper. So the word soil and then T-O and then the word supper.com. So they can head straight to my website and find everything there. Over on Facebook, I do have a Facebook page, which again is Soil to Supper. But our Facebook group is called the Soil to Supper. And that's the group anyone can join. It's a group for gardeners and foodies. And it's a place to ask questions. So on Monday, we have a Q&A day. So I'm usually available all day Mondays to answer anyone's gardening or food questions. Plus, everyone jumps in and, you know, helps out with any of the questions in the group. It's really good that way. And then other days, we have different theme days. We can post photos of what you're growing or a recipe or something that you've cooked. But it all is just a place for garden and food lovers to share what they love to do and grow. So that's the Soil to Supper Club. I'm also on Instagram at Soil to Supper. I love posting photos of my garden and food and my gardeners, because I do a lot of gardening with groups, especially with people for my horticultural therapy program. I'm really proud of what my gardeners who live in aged care are growing. So I'm always sharing photos of them. I'm on Twitter. Everything pretty much is Soil to Supper. So people can go to my website, soiltosupper.com, and do a search on a topic. So if you'd like to know how to start an organic garden, just jump in the search and type in starting an organic garden, and there's articles on that. That's probably the best place to start, or come over and join the Soil to Supper Club, which is our Facebook group, and that's a great place to connect. If anyone has any questions, they can jump in there and ask me directly. So that's brilliant. A great place. Oh, the other thing, sorry, I didn't mention, is I do, as part of the Soil to Supper Club, send out a regular newsletter, usually each fortnight. And in there, I'll put my latest blog article. I'll put in there some special offers to club members. You know, if I have an offer on a coaching or a garden mentor session, I'll post it in there. If I'm going to speak at events, I'll put it in there as well. There's just lots of information goes into that newsletter, which that list is actually growing rapidly. So it's wonderful to see that so many people are interested in learning to grow and wanting to find out ways to grow food and recipes and other things to help them with their health and well-being. So the Soil to Supper Club is a fun place to be.
Brilliant. I'm honestly, there's so many things that we could still talk about. So we'll have to have you maybe come back or do a blab, because there'll certainly be the TV kind of shows as well as the radio shows. And
I would love to.
There's lots of time sort of come back and maybe you can show us some plants and show us things, because it'll be on TV, not just the radio. So
I know I can share my garden with you all.
What would be fabulous, to do a tour around your garden on a blab. I think that would be amazing. So Cass, thank you so much. This whole hour has really shot by with all these amazing tales of Australia and what's going on over there, and how people can really get gardening. So
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
Join Cass and join me in the Soil to Supper Club and ask some questions and really, really get growing. And you might want to put your go over to the Facebook page or in a blog post and put all those links to different things, and maybe, you know, let people know what they can really get growing very simply. And we will see you on a blab very, very soon.
You will. Thank you, Jane. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, Cass. Speak soon. And that was the amazing Cass Manuel from Queensland, Australia, telling us all about dragon fruit and bananas. And I must say, I really envy that, to be able to grow all those things. But what was really interesting to me was hearing that there are problems with apples and pears, which are a UK staple and grow everywhere. Apple season is massive over here, so maybe we'll be able to do a swap. But now on to our final recipe quickly. Now, I talked about asparagus now coming into season over here for the next few weeks and how much I enjoy it completely. Asparagus is incredibly healthy. The nutrients, I could be here listing all night. It's such a mild tasting joy of a thing to eat. So while it's in season, if you can get hold of it, if it does grow locally to you, fantastic. If not, obviously reduce your sustainable, you know, keep your sustainability going and reduce your carbon footprint as much as possible. But whether it's asparagus or whether any other kind of green, which is very similar, the recipe really is for a beautiful hollandaise sauce, because hollandaise complements asparagus or any other similar kinds of greens wonderfully. So easy. You just need to take 4 egg yolks and about 250 grams of cold butter diced into cubes, and you need to put those into a saucepan, a very heavy base saucepan with a couple of tablespoons of water. We're talking like a Le Creuset or this kind of saucepan that's very, very thick and heavy based. And you just heat very, very gently, and you whisk constantly, and the butter will start to melt. If you keep whisking, the sauce will start to thicken up. And just when it's got to the thickness that you want, you just add a tablespoon of lemon juice, seasoning that you want, and then you can spoon it over your asparagus, over your eggs, so you can have hollandaise on eggs on top of a muffin, maybe with some smoked salmon or some layered spinach. Eggs Benedict, one of my favorite breakfasts in the world. Hollandaise is a very, very useful sauce for you to master, because it can jazz up just about anything, but it does go absolutely wonderfully asparagus, and it's one of my favorite things. So whether you can get hold of some asparagus and try it, or whether you'd like to make Eggs Benedict tomorrow or at the weekend, maybe it's a wonderful weekend breakfast or brunch, then enjoy that. You'll find the recipe either on my Facebook page, The Functional Foodie, or it's in a blog post on www.functional-foodie.com. So you can head over there and get that recipe. So there we go. One interesting show with Kath from Australia telling us about how we can get gardening. I don't think any of us have any excuses for not going and planting something this weekend as soon as possible if you haven't already. So even if it's just a few herbs or some microgreens that you grow on the windowsill, get planting, get growing, head over to Soil for Supper and get some information about how you can start to grow your own food. It's a wonderful thing to do with the children, to get them out and to get them their own plants that they can go out and look at, and they can watch growing and then harvest and then cook what you've grown. It's a fantastic feeling to see your own things growing and to harvest them and eat them. It's a lovely, lovely feeling. So until next time, I'm wishing you a wonderful couple of weeks. I will be interviewing, hopefully, the wonderful Jenny Marshall from a new website, membership site for teenagers between the ages of 14 and 20. They can join to help them with their personal development through the very sort of tumultuous and difficult times that we're living in. So that should also be a really fascinating interview. So until then, have a really, really good couple of weeks.
I can do anything, I can reach any goal today. I can do what I want, I can be what I want to be.
Coach on Fire Radio.
Geico presents sharing versus oversharing. Today, Bridget Griffin shared a video of her daily yoga routine, two self-help articles, and her new blog called Build Your Inner Bridge with Bridge. Girl, your sharing has turned into oversharing. No worries, Bridge. Geico has some info worth sharing with your 7 blog followers, like how you could save money on your car insurance, update your policy, and report a claim just by visiting geico.com. How's that for building your inner bridge? Bridge, Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.